Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. We have a couple of guests on the hold today. This is an interesting topic I've been following for over years. All of us have, not only in St. Louis, but throughout the country. And that's the aftermath of the shooting of Michael Brown and how the community is coming together to heal. And this is just a positive response. I think I saw initially an article in the newspaper, and then a friend of mine, Reverend Pat Powers, introduced me to these two writers, authors, artists, and community change activists. I just love the work that they're doing. My guests, Deb Gamble and Ron Montgomery, are here today talking about their new book of poetry, artwork, and just what we can do as a community to heal through art and through the spoken word. And I want to welcome them. Welcome, Ron and Deborah. How are you today?
Great. Thank you very much for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Well, today's a significant day. Tell us what's happening today.
Well, today we are launching our new book. It's called Let's Heal STL, Ferguson Messages in Poetry and Paint. And we're just as pleased as punch that it's going to be released today.
Well, and it was just lucky timing that I had a cancellation and opening that we were able to get you on. Now, and I wanted to play a song before we started, but we ran out of time. We have some nice audio selections that we're going to play later in the program. But, Ron, you're a St. Louis native, and you have traveled a lot. You have a large spiritual family all over the world, and you're a published author of six other books of poetry and CDs. Tell us about, you know, your personal journey of the spoken word and, you know, when you got started in an artistic response to social justice.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it has been a journey, you know, and the road has been kind of tortuous. I did not start off as a writer. I think, like so many others, I had another career or several careers, which began back in 1974. At that time, I particularly worked for the intelligence agency, for NSA. And then I was an artist for a while, and I was a musician, and I was a programmer, and ultimately now I'm retired from several careers, and experience an encore career as a consultant. But the writing has continued from 1974 until now, where I've written and thrown all of the pieces of my work into scrapbooks and into shoeboxes. And finally, I have decided to do some publishing as of 2010.
Oh, my God. I love that. I think that is so true for a lot of us, that we have writings on scraps of paper and journals, and, you know, those are just tucked away. I know I've been writing as well since probably the 70s. And, you know, so pulling that all together, that's a huge mountain to climb. And I'm also very interested that you worked for NSA in intelligence. And, you know, was that a stressful time in your life working in that kind of government agency?
Yeah, it was, actually. It was a time following the 60s and early 70s when I walked a kind of a fine line and struggled to figure out where I fit in as a black man. And as a citizen and as a soldier and as part of a community. So yeah, there were a lot of contradictions and challenges that I needed to in that period of time.
So I mean, that must have been very hard. I think it's hard working for any job with, you know, having this parallel life with passions and wanting to respond to things that are happening in our life. And I've been there. I lived in D.C. for 14 years. So I know what that's like. But what was it like for you? Did you find a release through writing that maybe you weren't able to speak out publicly on certain issues, but found your release through art?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I had a secret life. Yeah, the secret life was in my writing. You know, in my public life, in my career, in the intelligence community, I wasn't allowed to be vocal, radical, or anything else. In my private life, you know, it was cathartic. I was able to kind of come to grips with what my feelings were personally and reconcile those with the things that I needed to do on a daily basis that didn't necessarily line up. You know, so yeah,
so it must
I had a
be all like pouring out of you now. I mean, this is must have been like a volcano ready to erupt all these years, I would think.
Well, I had a lot of shoeboxes under the bed.
And so what are your other books about? What are some of the other topics of your other books?
Well, the other books kind of cover the gamut. Some are about love, poetry, some are about reconciliation, some are about being radical and trying to come to grips with my blackness. Some are about being human, you know, and dealing with the regular things that every one of us has to face. You know, how do we deal with our children? How do we deal with our families? How do we deal with community? How do we deal with life circumstances that aren't necessarily pleasant? How do we deal with love? And how do we deal with being on top of the mountain? So everything and anything. One of my,
so,
I have a hero, Nikki. Yes, go on.
Go ahead, Nikki.
Well, Nikki Giovanni is one of my heroes.
Yeah.
And I truly value her when I do have the opportunity to talk to her and with her. But, you know, I find that Nikki, like so many other artists, I think she's a social anthropologist. Very knowledgeable. She's a writer. She's a mother. She's a sister. You know, she's a humanist. She's all of these things, a historian, you know, and all these things kind of come together to give us the backdrop for the things that we use and use to create our poetry.
Wow. When did you first meet her?
I met her, about 25 years ago. Actually, I didn't meet her personally. I met her through my writing, which my sister gave to her to review because she was in school in a class with her. And Nikki sent me back a note. She sent me back a note, and the note was not what I wanted to hear. It was, continue to practice your craft. You will get better.
But that's a good challenge. It's good to be challenged.
Yes.
Wow. So let's bring this fast forward to 2014 and what happened August of 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri. Where were both of you? I assume you two have known each other for quite a while?
Yes.
Are you partners in art and business and in life?
Yes, we are.
Deb, I'll
okay, like good. Great. I assumed that. I just wanted to be clear. So where were the two of you when you first heard? I mean, you know, it's like the shot that is heard around the world. I mean, we all remember where we were when we heard of JFK's assassination, and I think we all remember where we were the day we heard about the Michael Brown shooting. But where were you, and what was your first reaction?
Go ahead, Ron.
No, please take that.
Okay. Well, I am a massage therapist and a yoga teacher. And so I was working with people on that particular day, and it was, and it has been different every day since then. People talk to me all the time about these issues, whereas before they just weren't brought up. And immediately the Michael Brown situation changed everything. People polarized, people were upset, people were angry, people were saying it's about time. All these topics came up and all these discussions began immediately with people in my personal and professional circle. I have found it so interesting how this is, in fact, is a shot that was heard around the world, and it's changed not only St. Louis, but my son lived in Australia, and within 24 hours he was contacting me and saying, "What's going on in Ferguson?" And so that's exactly the other side of the world, and where I was and what I was doing was my regular job, but just like 9/11, since then nothing's been the same.
Right. Wow. And so when did you two first go over to Ferguson to witness firsthand what was going on between the protesters and the police response and just the whole situation in the community?
Well, we followed it all along. It was a couple weeks before we actually got in the thick of things. I live in the Shaw neighborhood, and Ron lived for a very long time near West Florissant, where much of the unrest occurred up there. And so we were just, we had some deaths in the Shaw neighborhood. A young man was shot there as well. It's just, when you ask about that, it's like, where do you run the thread back to? It's such a web now, and we've been involved on so many different levels that it's just a huge web, and some things aren't as clear because we've been working so hard on this book.
And so talk about the community art response. The buildings, some of the businesses had broken glass, shattered glass from looting and different things that were happening there, and people had put plywood up, and spontaneously people started decorating that plywood board with messages of hope and drawings and words. When did you hear about that, and did you, what was your message that you put up on the boards?
Well, our message is the book, but what happened, how this whole thing initiated, was I took a walk on South Grand a couple of days after the unrest to see the damages and to see how things stood over there. You know, I just live a couple blocks away. And what I found, instead of sheer devastation, were these wonderful plywood board-ups of hope. And I wasn't really thinking about doing anything with that at the time, but I started photographing them. And then I found myself choked up a few times during the midst of that. And one thing I wasn't raised with respect for was intuition. It took me into my 30s before I really understood intuition. But there's a certain feeling I get, and I think most people who are tuned in do, when you know you've got to do something, and you know you've got to do something more. And that's what occurred to me when I took those photographs and stood in awe of all these beautiful pieces of artwork. And then I shared this information with Ron and with Rachel Witt from South Grand Business District. And Ron agreed to co-author with me. And then he photographed all of Ferguson that we have in the book.
Excellent. And did you self-publish?
Yes. We developed our own little publishing company.
Great. So was it hard to, did you have to leave some work out? Was it hard to make editorial choices of what to include and what not to include?
Oh, Ron, tell her how many we've done.
Well, we've done 76 versions now.
Oh, my God.
That was the last version that went to press. You know,
wow.
So here's the thing. You know, as we wrote the poetry and we were inspired by the different pieces of artwork. It changed a lot of what we were doing and how we were displaying the artwork and the words in the book. And our goal here was to develop something that was representative and insightful for, you know, what the artists had already done on South Grand and down on North New Florissant Road in Ferguson. So, yeah, we went through a lot of changes. I think it changed us as we began to look at what had been done.
You know, what it dawned on me, I don't know, within the last 24 hours, was the powerful impact of the name, the AIDS Memorial Quilt, the Names Project, in Washington, D.C., when I first saw that in 1987, to put the words and feelings from the heart on, you know, a public display. In that case, it was fabric. In this case, it's wood, and now a book form and spoken word. I mean, it conveys a message that no article, no news media, no amount of words can convey when you see something visually like that. Do you agree, or what's your thought on that?
I agree totally, but I would like to make one point here that the majority of these board ups no longer exist, or they're put away in someone's basement. The majority of these are not going to be seen again except in this book or Carol Klein's book for children. This is it. This is what we have. This is our chronicle of the community grassroots response. And I think because of that, if no other reason, this is an outstanding piece.
So you saw some pictures, you took pictures of the artwork, and then you wrote a poem to go along with that piece of artwork. Is that pretty much how the book is formatted?
That's pretty much it. We had an inspiration from the visual that went into some thoughts and feelings that I'm speaking for myself now, thoughts and feelings that I had in response to that guttural reaction to this beautiful art.
Yeah, let me change that. Let's make that a visceral reaction.
Yeah,
we did. You know, one of the things that we get to do when we write our poetry is to have that visceral, that, you know, that gut level reaction, and to put it in a way that it creates a connection with our readers. And that's part of the reason for all the different versions, you know, the different rewrites. And I think we finally got to it with this. You know, like Deb said, there is an opportunity for us to forget as a community the things that have come before. You know, when we look at Selma, the movie, you know, the response to that for people who have been there is gut-wrenching. You know, it is it touches them, and it's something you never forget. This is something, we were here for 9/11. We were here for this in Ferguson. There's Tiananmen Square. There are the things that are happening in Baltimore. This is a worldwide response to the need by people to be free, to have equality, to be able to reference justice, touch it, and be touched by it. And so what we have the opportunity to do with this book is to write something that will go into the Library of Congress, that will do some good for the young people who are coming up and taking the reins. And that's one of the purposes, and Deb will tell you that, you know, our goal here is not to make money. Our goal is to make enough of a profit to be able to funnel it back into the organizations, the, you know, the 501c3s, the young people that are going to lead our country forward and hopefully, finally, come to resolution to some questions about, you know, when will we be free?
And so who are some of the young people that you've met on the streets and through this project over the last 12 months that you feel have impacted your lives and vice versa, that you've influenced them? Is there one or two people that you can think about that you could share with us a story of someone who was hurting and then kind of had a personal transformation through art or through mentorship? I mean, are you mentoring any of the young artists that you've met?
Go ahead, honey.
Go on, Deb. No, go ahead.
So one of the groups that we've had some contact with that we're really pleased to sponsor through the sales of this book is the Ferguson Youth Initiative. They have been really instrumental to trying to hold things together for the youth in the area. They've been very original in giving some empowerment to the youth, to teach them to, they have their own governing board. Nothing is done there without the young people's A-OK. They've also been very active in the art community. They've done a lot of the ribbons and artwork and have participated and continue to participate in the arts, not only visual arts, but acting and singing and all kinds of things. But they also work with the at-risk youth. They run the, and I was a juvenile officer for 7 years in one period of my life, one chapter of my book. And so they work with those at-risk kids and supervise them on their work details that are assigned by the courts, but they also try to draw them into the family and offer them support and recreational opportunities. So in general, we're very, very pleased to support this group and to hope that what we do with the sales of this book is going to help make a difference for them.
So are there some events planned in that regard? Any public readings or any events coming up in the next couple of months?
We have been talking with them. We don't have anything in stone yet. They're participating in the farmers market up there, and they have open arts events the first Friday of every month. And that's in negotiation right now.
That's great. Well, maybe we can actually also bring them over to the St. Charles Art Foundry for a reading or some performance art at Second Thursday that takes place every month at the Foundry Art Center. It was just last night, and there's one in September and October, and it's a way, it's a place, it's a free event where artists can come together to teach. There's like 10 different artists that teach at different tables, and then there's performance stage, and there's a food truck, and so that would be great, because I was just having this conversation this week with someone that lives in Florissant area, and she's a woman of color, and she has a couple of kids, and she's a professional business coach, and she joined the St. Charles Chamber, and I said, well, I'm curious, you know, why you chose this chamber, you know, versus other chambers around the metropolitan region, and she had gone to school in St. Charles at Lindenwood and, you know, ultimately would like to live in St. Charles County. And her perception is that maybe there'd be discrimination in the schools towards her kids, and she's concerned. And I'm not from Missouri originally. I moved here 12 years ago. And I've seen a change towards the better in the last 12 years, but we have a long ways to go. And you know, I guess I had my eyes popped wide open when I first moved here from Colorado, and I heard someone say the N-word in my presence, and I was just flabbergasted. I mean, I was like, you could have blown me over with a feather at that point, because I just was so taken aback that people were still using that language. I mean, I came from the East Coast. I don't know. People don't speak with a lot of hate speech in places I had lived prior to Missouri. So, but What are your suggestions for local communities who want to begin dialogue on subjects of racial healing and diversity and acceptance and everybody living together as one? This has been just a hotbed of topic in the. It's not, you know, you mentioned Baltimore, Ron. You know, St. Louis isn't the only area struggling with these conversations, but, you know, I think sometimes people had swept it under the rug. We thought, you know, I think a lot of people thought, oh, there aren't issues, but there are so many issues, and now they're all boiling to the surface. So what are some ways some local communities can start being proactive?
Well,
take that for a second. Let me take that for a second. One of the things that we can do as a community is to be receptive and open. You know, it starts at home. You know, one of my poems references the idea that I went looking for a lesson, and the person handed me a mirror and said, "This is lesson one." Okay? It starts at home. We look at ourselves. We look at our values. We look at our attitudes. We look at our behaviors. That's where the conversation starts. The good thing is that, and I got to tell you, I'm saying this with full knowledge that there are just so many young people out there today that are involved in so many different efforts to move the conversation forward. You know, they have taken this by the horns and they are moving forward. There are a lot of organizations there. You know, it's just a matter of if you really want to be involved, find something that your heart connects to, that your spirit connects to, that helps to build community and build connection between humans and be a part of it. It doesn't have to be big. It's do what you can.
I love
it. Everybody has a part.
I love that. And that sounds like a... Go ahead, Deborah.
I was just going to say, we just have to keep the awareness to the surface. I think that's where things went wrong here. And to keep that awareness, to be aware of what you're connected to, how you respond to it, and to really be true to yourself when you know something's just plain wrong, and support the things that you feel strongly in your soul that it's right, and don't take no for an answer when you know it's right.
Mm-hmm. And that message, I guess, for me, was first made more obvious was when I worked at the Holocaust Museum when it first opened in Washington, D.C., and I was the first non-Jewish person they hired. And part of the message of that museum was the concept of being a bystander, and that if you witness discrimination of any kind, if you witness hate speech of any kind, that you need to speak up and speak out. Otherwise, being a bystander is supporting that culture and that propaganda and that message of hate. And I mean, that was just a big message, and that, you know, the Nazis did that for many years prior to their actual physical actions against a group of people and various groups of people beyond Jewish victim groups. Then there were many non-Jewish victim groups. But so if we hear hate speech or we hear jokes, blonde jokes, Jewish jokes, black jokes, I mean, I don't tolerate those in my presence. And I think it starts, like you said, Ron, it starts at home. It starts with having those dialogues at your local chamber of commerce, suggesting topics, bringing either one of you in to speak. I'm sure both of you are available for speaking engagements, right? How do people reach you if they want to have you come do a reading from the book?
Well, we are on Facebook as individuals and as Let's Heal STL. Message us, come like our page, Let's Heal STL, look under Deborah Gamble, Wordsmith, or Ronald Montgomery. We're easy to find. That's probably one of the more common ways. We also are not afraid to give you our telephone number if you reach us and are sincere in your efforts to do something.
Both of you have your own individual sites as well. Deborah, Deborah Gamble, GAMBILL.com, where there's information not only about your book, but about your yoga and massage and your professional life as well. And
well,
then, Ron, go ahead.
The one I use for writing is Deborah H. Gamble, GAMBILL, Wordsmith. That's my writing site.
Okay. I thought I had tried that, and there might have been an issue with that this morning. So you may want to look into the link because it didn't seem to be active. And, Ron, what's your site?
Well, I'm on Facebook as well. I'm just Ronald Montgomery, R-O-N-A-L-D. Montgomery, like Montgomery, Alabama. And, you know, I'm very responsive there. I also have an email account, which I'm I'll gladly share. It is spirit, the word spirit, S-P-I-R-I-T, the number two, the word spirit again, S-P-I-R-I-T, dot poetry at yahoo.com.
Fantastic. And
our telephone
several
number,
of your, and go ahead.
And our telephone number, incidentally, we don't hide that either. It's 314-690-3230. And we are very responsive.
And you have several books also that can be purchased through Amazon.com, No Turning Back, and some of your other titles. You want to talk about any of those other books that you've written?
Sure. Only Love would be another one. Flowers and Life's Garden. There are six of them. If you go to Barnes & Noble, you will find all of them there. You will find them on Amazon. And there's another one coming out right now that's called Spirit to Spirit. It's an anthology.
Fantastic. We have an audio clip from Let's Heal STL, and it's the Just Us Now, or Just Us, I should say. And let's play that, and then, Ron, you can tell us a little bit more background behind that. Okay? Does that sound good?
Okay.
The other
sounds
audio
good.
Files are still processing, but let's go to this one. So this is Ron Montgomery reading a poem called Just Us.
Just Us Now. The wait is over. Today we sat at Amtrak, all together waiting, like all the days before, waiting on justice to arrive. But she wasn't around. Seems she was elsewhere bound. Yesterday, we walked Lambert's perimeter on runways, cold tarmac with heated signs in December. While flights were rerouted, delayed, and canceled, she rescheduled. The day before, we balanced on riverfront cobblestones. We kept hope alive while Becky Thatcher went to and fro, looking bored. But no justice was on the manifest that day. Justice was delayed. Back in the 20th century, we hoped she'd be on local buses, garbage trucks, and at lunch counters, though not on the menu, to walk in black and white picket lines. Back then, sometimes she arrived on time. Tomorrow, we'll wait hand in hand on equality, hoping he'll show with a ticket for court's justice in tow. No guarantees that she'll show at all, but there's always hope. In the days to come, like days past, we will rent buses, work together, walk together, talk together, and sitting close, we will capture the intentions and attentions of justice and equality by any means necessary, in any measure. When our freedom ride shares are done, we'll come home. The testimonials and the terminals will be full, but they'll be empty of justice and equality. They'll be too busy for out-of-town trips, making St. Louis the new Plymouth Rock for every shade and Liberty Bell for every voice. We will answer the questions with no hesitation. If not us, who? It is us, in all colors, not them. Come on, diversity. If not now, when? It is now, not when. Extended patience is not the answer. If not here, where? Here is where we begin, not there. Ferguson is my home. Today, we will walk together, not just us. Now justice, here and now, together, community. The wait is over. Pray now that our sons and daughters come home alive. Pray now for real dialogues with people of all colors, a pale you, a rainbow me. Pray now that our sons and daughters come home alive. Pray now for real dialogues with people of all colors, a pale you and a rainbow me. Pray now that our children outlive their parents, a brighter future to see. Just as much pray that all see God is listening and blessing changes, not our colors, but our hearts and minds that he's rearranging. Not the end, just amen. Not just us now. The wait is over.
Wow, that was really powerful, and I love the percussion in the background. So, Ron, tell us a little bit more about that one. I know that's your favorite. Tell us some background about that one.
Well, Deb and I decided that we were doing the book, but thought that audio might be nice too, especially if we did a book on CD, and began recording using the music we had available to us and using our gifts, our voices, and the poetry we had written. That's been quite the experience. We are still working on that. That is not coming out today. That will come out in the next month or so. But, you know, what we're doing is we're drawing on everything. You notice that I changed my voice there, and Deb will do the same thing, and we will create a new palette for our poetry. But, you know, what we do is we reach back into the things we remember. I remember Martin Luther King. I remember John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I remember the days when they were killed, and I remember what I was doing. And I remember that this reminds me so very much of the 60s again, because I was there. You know, so that's what a lot of this is about. We're trying to be true to the inspiration of the artists that have painted on these sheets of plywood. And we're also drawing on everything that we have learned about our humanity or inhumanity to share a message.
Mm. Mm. Do you see that this a future time when this book and poetry could be performed on stage as maybe part of a theatrical production or just as itself?
We're open to a lot of things, right, Deb?
That's right. We'll see where it evolves. You know, you never know where these things go.
Exactly.
So you're there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to see that on stage, too. There's a lot of possibilities. So of the different poems, which came first? I mean, did you write every day? Did you only write, you know, did this come in fits and starts, so to speak?
Oh my, we just wrote. Some days it was late at night. Ron in particular likes the wee hours of the night to do a lot of his writing. I like mornings a lot. I feel fresh and more clear. And some days you just get stuck. You have the writer's block and feel like, my goodness, what am I doing? And I can hardly do this myself, let alone share it with someone else. But and other days, it just comes. And
so were there days that were, you know, more newsworthy, when there was more news, when the, you know, no indictment was released from the St. Louis County Grand Jury? Were those days that you took to the pen and paper?
Well, we didn't start writing until after that happened on these particular topics. So as the community responded and the media responded to what happened after the no indictment decision, passions ran high, and that was the start of that was the seedbed for this particular book, really.
So I want to play one of your poems read by you, Deb, called If Only. Is there anything you want to tell us about it before we listen to it?
Well, I came upon a little guy on the sidewalk on South Grand, and he was working very intently, as you could see this picture in the book, on an infinity symbol, that figure eight, never-ending symbol. And he was very intently working, and his mama was there encouraging him, but not doing his work for him. He was kneeling on the sidewalk in his little jacket in the sunshine, and I said to her, do you mind if I photograph him? And she said, not at all. And I looked at him, and I said, do you know what you're painting there? And he looked up at me right in the eye and said, well, yes. And right there I had the inspiration for this particular poem.
Wow. And that picture is playing right now as people are listening to this interview. We have a picture of that little boy. So we're going to go to this now.
If only. If we only understood what our children already know, that optimism isn't an outrage, that everyone needs kindness, that beauty should be celebrated, and freedom to dance like a dervish out amongst the raindrops should be everybody's right. If we only understood what our children already know, that a smile means everything, that it only takes a moment to make a new friend for life, that when a friend falls down, you offer a hand to help them up, and everybody takes a turn when it's time for the slide. If we only understood what our children already know, that peace and play are far better than fighting and cheating friends, and that bullies need to stop, and that we are all meant to be kind to everyone we meet. Perhaps it's because they aren't so far away in time and distance to remember the joy of the light. Maybe it's because they are the light and our future. We have a responsibility to help them grow so we might learn what they already know.
Oh, that is beautiful. And that's so true, like children will lead the way. Children, and you mentioned that too, Ron, about, you know, you're creating a legacy through this piece of work that the youth are now taking up the mantle to move these issues forward. Deborah, are you going to stay in touch with that young artist that you took his picture?
No. part of my yogic training is not to be overly attached. And we had a moment that I understood what he was talking about, and he explained himself so beautifully. And that moment just will remain in my mind in a picture frame. And there we are.
It reminds me of a guest I had a few weeks ago, Humans St. Louis, where they take pictures of people and on the street and ask questions, and it's just a moment in time. But sometimes that image can last forever and capture so much in that. Are you planning to do any exhibits of the artwork with the poetry reading and book signing?
Well, we would like very much to do that. I know that the Regional Arts Commission has a few pieces, and St. Louis University, who we've been in contact with and may do some things with, has some pieces. And I think the History Museum may have one or two pieces. And so we're open to doing events in conjunction with those places. And they're on our list of contacts. Right now we've just been busy getting this book out.
Great. Well, I will certainly talk to the Foundry about an exhibit here. I think it's phenomenal what the two of you have come together to create, drawing on your own strengths and artistic expression. And it's just an interesting collaborative project. Ron, you've done many books by yourself prior to this one. Is it, talk about working together with a significant other. That sometimes a joy, and sometimes it can be a challenge for artists. Or I know myself, I'm in business with my partner and my artist collaborative, my collaborative artist partner, as well as my business partner and partner in life. So what are some tips or advice you have for other couples that are approaching a joint project in business or in art?
You get a lot of rest. breathe deeply. This has been quite the experience. You're absolutely right. I have never written or done a project like this with anyone before. I mean, I've done curriculum development where I've had whole teams of people working on things, but it's been interesting. I've been able to maintain distance and be quite impersonal about what's going on. It's about the quality of the product there. But for this, there's so much invested in terms of emotion, in terms of feelings, in terms of connection, in terms of reference points and that sort of thing. It's been very, very challenging. I mean, it's been an effort of love by both of us to get this done. But we both realize that having different perspectives puts us in the same situation as people that live in community have. Mm-hmm. Different reference points, different backgrounds, and different ways of interpreting things. So, and you'll see that in our writing. You know, we write differently. We actually perform differently. But, you know, there are no two people who are exactly alike. And I think it's our respect for one another that allows us to continue and get to this point where the book is coming out. Without that and maturity and a certain amount of wisdom, it's almost, it can be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten
and
here.
Can you talk about when you first, I want to get personal a little bit, because I don't think we talk enough about the challenges of interracial couples. I mean, in most parts of the United States, it's a non-issue. But what were some of the challenges you had personally as a couple when you first got together?
I'll let Deb address that.
Well, I think in my experience, I hadn't dated anyone of color. And so it opened up a lot of questions about the cultural differences, and really being involved with Ron has taught me so much about another perspective that otherwise I just wouldn't have had. I haven't come from a background where there's been extreme prejudice and all, but my people are from the South originally, and then reflecting upon it after being with Ron, I realized that just like the St. Louis community became numb to some of the prejudicial aspects, in fact, my family in the past has had some of that. And so I like the community here in St. Louis, on a personal level, I began to realize different aspects of that, and Ron is such a good communicator that he could really inform and enlighten me about things, and I really appreciate that in him, because I think sometimes for whatever reason it's hard to get the information we need about how people feel about this. But Ron is a pretty clear communicator about how he's feeling and his history and family. And we haven't really had a great many struggles like you might think we would have in public or situations like that with people be discriminatory. In fact, in my own experience, when we're together publicly, for the most of the time, we create this wonderful energy between us that really supersedes a lot of that. And if it's being done, I, for one, am really not aware of that being a huge factor. Usually people respond, they're curious about us more than anything. They want to know, how is this working for the two of you? You know, what makes this work? And so a lot of people just kind of sit and observe us, which is a stage
and
we
you're
enjoy.
Being, you're just being teachers and role models just by going about your everyday life.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to grandstand on everything in order to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, you know, when it comes for us to come to the front and take a stand on things, I don't think we're afraid to, but in general, we're just two people. And, you know, there are more genetics that differentiate us from being tall and short than there are for us to being of different color. I read that recently, and I think
that
is amazing to think about.
I love that.
And it doesn't matter.
I love that. And I love also that you call yourself a certifiable joyologist. That's awesome. Oh, that's so leaning towards optimism. And how the impact of having an optimistic outlook changes our biology on a cellular level. I mean, this has been proven scientifically that joyful people tend to be healthier and pessimistic people tend to develop a lot of health issues. What is your reading of that? I mean, you've studied a lot of health and wellness type topics, Deborah. Have you seen that in your work with massage and yoga?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Absolutely. You know, we're not just in the West, we tend to put so much emphasis on what's physically going on, you know, working out and being in shape or not in shape and your body concept and all that. But the fact of the matter is we're all layers anyhow. And I do work on the physical level and on the massage table doing body work, but I also am very aware of people's energy. And, you know, our cells are really programmed all to heal if we provide them the right environment. And part of that environment is to be able to be positive, upbeat. We just attended a Start Moving, Start Living seminar, mini-seminar last night, and screening of a documentary that specifically targets poorer communities, Latino and African American communities, on health issues. And as they were talking about, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You get poor food choices, you stop moving, you don't want to move because it hurts, you hurt more because you don't move, and this cycle continues and continues. And how to break that cycle. And I think that's true for all of us, you know. And mm-hmm. I think this whole movement that we're seeing in Ferguson and St. Louis that is spread all over the place is that we are all tired of being sick in this manner. And mm-hmm. society is trying to heal what's been wrong for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. So true, and so important to turn off the TV and put down the newspaper and not engage in a lot of the negativity. I remember Dr. Andrew Weil in 1996, I was a workaholic living in Washington, D.C., and I was recuperating from a car crash and had time to start watching Oprah and reading books like by Dr. Andrew Weil. And he had talked about taking a news-free day, which at the time I thought was like this radical thing because I was a news junkie and reading three papers a day and always needing to know everything that was going on. But I was also very stressed out and engaged in some unhealthy behaviors. And I took that news-free day, and it was, you know, the world didn't come crashing to an end because I didn't know what was going on that particular day. And now I don't think I really pick up the paper at all, except maybe, you know, now and then to look at the lifestyle section or something. But and my life is better without some of that negativity coming in. So it's something that we can pay attention to and just take time out to meditate, take time to get out in nature, take time to do art and tune inside the messages we're receiving. I would love to wrap up the program. This has been really fascinating. I feel we could talk for a whole nother hour. I just really want to thank you, Ron and Deborah, for taking time out of a very busy schedule, I'm sure, the day the book gets released, Let's Heal STL, Saluting the True Spirit of St. Louis. Any closing thoughts before we play? I have a selection here, Flowers Face the Sun, which I love the title of that. Any closing thoughts as we wrap up the program today?
Just find the one thing that your heart and your spirit connects to and do it so that it benefits the community at large. It's not just about us, but it does begin at home.
Awesome. Okay.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been a true pleasure. Thank you, Brenda.
Ditto, and I look forward to meeting you in person and helping to promote your book and possibly doing an exhibit at Butterfly and Moon in historic St. Charles, where we can have you come and do a reading and a book signing. We would love that. So we'll continue that conversation. And we're closing out today with Flowers Face the Sun, read by Deborah Gamble from her new book, Let's Heal STL.
Flowers always face the sun. Little faces of orange-colored poppies with dark chocolate centers bravely await the dawn in a stiff breeze. They quake in anticipation of the warm kisses lovingly tendered by the caressing lips of the sun. The splendor becomes them as their faces radiate the warmth. A healthy glow reflects their beauty and vitality, not possible without him. And even after raging storms, soggy, tear-stained soil, and a dark dawn of a new day, and even when mowed down and left bleeding and exposed, again, once more, the face rises to the sun to be warmly kissed back to wholeness. As soon as they all look up, he reappears and smiles on them. They each shine in his special light, opening their willing leaves to enfold and feed on his rays. Of their being, each cell reflects the hologram of their whole. They quake, smile, vibrate, dance, reflecting and reviving, joyfully full of soul shine. Like them, I seek refuge in his healing. All of me wants to dance and sway and celebrate the warm-hearted rays that offer solace and blessings on to and into each cell of my own being. I face you now. Open my arms, my heart, my spirit, willing to receive your welcome healing rays and your loving ways.